Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon Music. With Amazon Music, you get access to over 90 million songs in HD, always ad-free and on demand. With Spatial Audio, you can experience your favorite music like never before. Listeners of the show get a free 30-day trial of Amazon Music. Head over to music22.blueboxdigital.com and start listening today.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Think Outside the Blue Box. I am Anthony Rivera, the lead videographer and editor here at Blue Box Digital. And this is a podcast about creative journeys, the entrepreneurs, the hustlers, the people that are following their dreams and doing what they love to do. And today I have an award-winning producer here in the Florida area, Ms. Cora Linda. Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, so tell me what got you into the film industry? I know I've seen a few of your films already, so.
I kind of fell into it by accident. I had a friend who like PA'd and did some stuff like that and had like worked background in a couple of things, and we were watching something and she was like, oh, that was me opening that door. Or, oh, look, that's my back. And I was like, nice. Whoa, you can like just be in movies. We were like, I don't know, teenagers. Like I was like, whoa, I didn't know that was like a thing. And then it just kind of like was in my head as something that might be fun to do, but it didn't seem like real. And then when I was older, I was much older, but I was working in LA and a friend of mine asked if I wanted to help. She was like day playing on like this event and wondering if I wanted to help set up. And fast forward 10 years, I'd been working for that same art director for that event for 10 summers and just kind of fell in love with lighting and design. And I became a certified set rigger and like kind of, it's kind of natural to go from there into just general lighting and then camera and stage and stage handing and stage managing and all that kind of stuff. Before I knew it, I ended up producing and directing, and it was just kind of like a 20 years of just kind of moving. I don't know how to describe it.
Nice. Yeah, so you're just kind of riding the wave. Nice. What, did you start working on like personal projects first? Did you have any like independent, super independent, like individual film?
No, I was kind of just lucky in like what I got to work on. When I was working as an event manager, I was at a hotel that was also a filming location. So I was a site rep there and kind of got to be around a lot of TV shows, but they were like big, like Hollywood shows in LA. So
gotcha.
I just kind of got to like watch them work and like meet different people and like kind of see what they did. And you know, they're all unions, so I didn't like do anything. I just stood there and watched.
You just, yeah, you just watched.
But I directed something for a hit record project in 2012 that was literally just my friends and I in our backyard. I don't really count it as like a first time directing because it was just like my friends and I kind of like fooling around. Well, no, my first like real directing thing was Names on the Wall. That was like it was an actual project with like professionals, not just like, hey,
your friends,
let's
yeah.
make a thing. And yeah, it was.
What was that about, the film that you made with your friends? I'm just curious because.
No, you're fine. You can see it. It's not great. It's called Departures, and it was kind of like just a film collaboration happening on Hit Record that was kind of this story of, it was a voiceover of a poem, and it was kind of left open to interpretation as far as what it was about. And we decided that it was kind of a love story between a young man and the woman that he was in love with, and then his like father or grandfather figure and him. Like just the idea that this young person got kind of swept up in this sort of tragic love story, and that the girl died and the grandfather's kind of coming back to reconnect with him and kind of pull him back to life, and that the poem is the grandfather's voice the whole time. So it's very cool.
Was that your idea?
It was me and a guy named Doug Sarive. And I'm trying to remember who else helped with us on the writing. I want to say a really awesome writer in England named Emma Connor. I want to say she helped with that too. I feel like she did. It was a long, it was like 10 years ago. Yeah. So I'd have to pull up the credits and like, look, but we did a bunch of like collaboration on the story development and how we wanted to tell it and what we wanted to do. And it was like a good, I want to say 2 or 3 day shoot. Like we like, you know, went at it and just did it and put it together and then edited it. And the music was done by this woman in Ireland, named Belle. And it was just, it was a very hit.
How do you connect with these? How do you connect with your crew back then? Because I know like when you're starting out, it's kind of like you have to know people a little bit in the industry.
So are you familiar with Hit Record?
No, no.
Okay. So here... Ready? Hit Record is, I'm just kidding. Hit Record is, it's
let's get
online,
the infomercial.
Yeah, right. And it's an online open collaborative production community. It was a production platform for a while. It's kind of migrated over the years. It's run by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He's the director of the,
nice.
You know, everything.
The project, yeah.
Yeah, originally it kind of started as an idea of, let's make art together and connect and collaborate in ways that go beyond the kind of stereotypical Hollywood bubble. And it really influenced the way that I learned to make art. Like as a producer, all of my production was through either a Hit Record project or Hit Record adjacent, like with other Hit Recorders. So like as much as I was indoctrinated into like the ways of, you know, like the quality of work from Hollywood professional, the way of going about it was this sort of other kind of world, which is collaboration.
The independent route.
It's very independent. And it's the idea that there's some great quotes where Joe says things like communication is at the heart of human progress, and that, you know, media is, you know, back in, you know, 2009, when he was first kind of like launching this, he would say things like that media was becoming more of a dialogue and less of a monologue, like people talking to each other and less being talked at. And he saw that as a way of growing art and of people connecting in ways that go beyond just, I made a thing, look at it. It's more like, I made a thing. Oh, cool. That inspired me. I'm going to make this thing. Oh, you're going to make that thing. And it just kind of grows. So the idea
it's like a collaborative community.
Exactly. That was the launch point of Hit Record, was whatever you make, someone else can do what's called a remix. And it's called a remix, whether it's text, photo, video, audio, anything. You could draw a picture and I could be inspired to write a story that could make somebody do a voiceover, that somebody could remix into a song, that somebody could turn into a music video, like all of these things. So already on that platform was artists all over the world. So like I met Doug through, well, I met him on the set of Don John, but I only knew him because of Hit Record, and I was only there because of Hit Record. So then the other people that we were working with either were Hit Recorders or they were like Doug's friends in LA. He went to Emerson, so he was kind of in the Emerson Mafia, which is a whole separate like network level of connections. I ended up dating a guy from Emerson for like a year, and it was definitely, that's its own network of world. But the idea of Hit Record is collaboration. It's about, Joe often quotes Walt Disney, who said, Disney Corporation, learn your roots. He said, we don't make movies to make money. We make money to make more movies. Sorry.
I love that.
Right? I'm mad at Disney right now. I'm like, you need to like research your founder. But that was the vibe. That was the idea. Like, we're not here to make money to get rich. We're here to make art and to tell stories and to find humanity. And I loved that. And I fell in with it.
It's about the art at the end of the day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I first joined Hit Record, it was actually in late 2011. there was a lot of like goals. You know, they wanted to publish a book one day, maybe do a TV show, maybe do live shows, like all this stuff. And shortly after I joined, they actually, I think they'd had they already, or was that their first time at Sundance? They played Sundance 2012, which I think was their second time at Sundance. And like the shorts and stuff like that. They published a book called The Tiny Book of Tiny Stories, which is now like a 4-part book series. They ended up making a TV show called Hit Record on TV. There's 2 seasons. The first one won an Emmy.
Nice.
They've done a bunch of online collaborative projects. There was something called Create Together that won another Emmy. Did live shows. They played at the Orpheum. Like, there's just this growth that was kind of like insane. Now there's an app. It's the Hit Record app. The focus is more on just kind of like making art. I'm not really sure. I haven't been too involved lately just because I've been really busy. But it's the community and the people who I've met through there kind of like define who I am as an artist now and how I go about the collaborative path. Because like this, I was having video calls like this 10 years ago and working with collaborators and like making projects. Like, everyone's like, oh my gosh, we can Zoom. And I'm like,
yeah,
Zoom is really
like, welcome to, yeah.
I'm like, have you heard of Skype? Don't know what to tell you, but it's kind of, okay.
Yeah. I've been doing this for years, you know?
Yeah, it was weird to me. I'm like, the world is so small. Are you just noticing this? But I guess, but I also, you know, it is different when somebody's sitting in the room with you. There is something to be said to having that conversation with an editor, like, wait, can you just slide that over one frame or whatever? But I mean, now there's technology where there's like one millionth of a second delay or something. Like, it's so close. But we've collaborated. It's actually how I met my husband, is through Hit Record. But
nice.
He's a musician, and all of his songs, his top collaborator is this woman in England or Scotland. And she, like, that, actually, another thing about it, I don't think they've ever met in person.
Wow.
And
you got to make that happen.
It's on the list. I've met her. She's wonderful. Her name's Metaforist. Everybody look her up, Metaforist.
Nice.
But she's a phenomenal writer, and songwriter and singer. And the music my husband's done with her is just fantastic. And that collaborative idea, it just opens up what you're thinking and what your limitations are, because you don't have to. Like, I know in the intro you said that I'm in Florida. Like, yeah, I'm in Florida right now, but we film all over the country. We go wherever we're working.
Yeah, you're everywhere.
It doesn't matter, you know? So I don't remember what question you asked, and I hope I answered it. But,
yeah, no, you did.
That was how I did.
That Hit Record.
Yeah, that's why I kind of don't consider that like my first time like direct, because it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't really, like, I kind of was. It was more of, like, a collaboration. It wasn't really, like, where I was the director and I was, you know, directing and doing a thing. It was, like,
it's more like a group project.
Yeah, exactly. It was a very, very collaborative and very, like, figuring out the story and the direction and what way people were going to be doing things was very collaborative. It wasn't, like, my first time actually directing, which was Names on the Wall, where I was in charge, and it was terrible.
In the driver's seat, yeah.
I cried the night before we started filming.
I bet that's a huge responsibility. I mean, I've directed, but only like small short films. Nothing like probably you've worked on. So, I know that's got to be a lot of pressure. Like, everybody's looking at you.
It's, well, I'll just say, you've seen Encanto, I assume.
Yeah, yeah.
When that. When her sister, is it Lucia, who sings the Pressure Like a Drip, Drip, Drip song?
Yeah.
I cried so hard I had to leave the room.
Oh, no.
I was, like, shocked at how hard I was crying.
Wow.
But, yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't know if I should ask you to cut that out, because, like, there's, like, this idea that, like, when you're in charge, you not only have to have no emotions, but, like, you can't get upset either. Like, if you cry, you're weak. And if you're tough, you're an a-hole. And that's it. You have to be this, like, perfect centered, kind, calm. Nothing can faze you. Nothing can bother you. And it's kind of like, that's just not real, but it's also kind of not fair. Like, okay, so everybody's messing up. Everything's about to fall apart. Nobody's doing their job. Everything's collapsing. And if I get upset and go, what is happening? Oh, no, now we're all upset and you're being mean to us. It's like
the whole production falls apart.
And it's like, okay, well, would you like me to just leave and then you can just have nothing and you won't get your paychecks and you'll be stranded on location because nobody's going to take care of your flight because I'm the one who's in charge of that? Like, what do you want me to do? And I don't know. I feel like this could easily be either taken out of context or quoted in the future and used to, like, cancel me on the internet. But I don't know. I think someone once told me that when you're a leader, you are the head of the spear, which means there's nothing to the left or right of you. And whatever that spear hits, you are the point of impact that's going to push through everything. And if you collapse, the spear isn't going to be strong enough and it's just going to stop. And it means that you have to bear the brunt of that impact. And you have to be the one who, no matter what, keeps pushing. Because if you're in charge and you go, I don't want to do this anymore, everybody who is counting on you for employment, everybody who just worked so hard to get where they are in that moment, you're going to be letting them down. And it's not just about, you know, I don't want to deal with this today. It's like, okay, well, I'm sure.
How do I deal with this today?
Exactly. It's how do I deal with this today? And I don't know, ask you some more questions. I feel like these are all like such dark answers. I feel like I need to like ask me something nice.
No, I love it. I love it. I'm getting to the root of Cora here.
Well, see, that's the thing is I'm a very happy person in general. I don't like people who either like misdirect me or like give me some sort of false, like I'll make decisions based off the information I have. And if you give me wrong information and I make a bad decision, I'm going to be upset because I'm like, but at the same time, it's my responsibility to make sure that I'm researching the information, making sure that it's like, you know. But as a general rule, I don't know. I think people, like the only reason I work as a producer is because it's a very specific job. And you have to do it a very specific way or it's not going to work. People don't get paid. PAs have to like go to the bathroom in a water bottle because there's no bathroom nearby and nobody thought about it or cared about it enough to make sure that it was set up, or there's not enough PAs for them to cover for each other to go for 5 minutes to the bathroom, or meals suck.
Stuff you don't even think about sometimes.
There's like
so much of it.
It's details, and it's the little details that are so stupid but make all the difference. Like, hey, in the morning, here's fresh coffee for everybody as they arrive. It's a really simple thing that really doesn't cost that much money that makes a difference to people. You know, we're 6 hours in, let's break for lunch. Like, just break. Or, you know, we just went for 15 hours. Let's not come back in 4. Let's come back in 10. Like, it's all of that scheduling and planning and logistics and knowing what it takes to get through every single step of the day so that you can plan it properly. And it takes a lot of, I usually either am just producing or I'm producing and co-directing or I'm producing and directing. And I always try to have somebody on set to be the producer, because when you are the producer, like the production coordinator or the line producer or whatever, like actually on set handling all the logistics and you're directing.
Oh no, that's a nightmare.
I
think the movie suffers at that point, because I mean you can't really concentrate on what you need to be concentrating on.
Yeah, and as the director, I need to have so many things in my head, not just what lens are we using or where is the camera or what do the lights look like or what is that actor's emotional beat, but every single piece of the story leading up to that moment, every single piece of the story going from that moment, and every single thing going into the frame in that moment that's going to be able to be strung together with all of those other things, including post things like sound and VFX and score. And, you know,
you kind of have to keep like a running version of the movie in your head while you're going through this. Yeah.
Constantly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have,
you're the one kind of keeping everything together. I know actors usually ask me like, okay, what emotion do I have to kind of exhibit here? And I'm kind of like breaking down the scene that we just shot before, mm-hmm. or like if we're shooting out of order, kind of, yeah. I'm sure you've dealt with that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and then there's like little moments where like you want the space between, like, acting isn't talking. Acting is being human. So, you know, if someone says something, maybe the person doesn't answer them. You know, maybe someone says something and the person's just like,
yeah,
that's it. And that's their reaction, you know, but you have to get that. Maybe there's a sound that's going to get their attention, but you need time visually to put the sound in. Otherwise you can't. So you have to film nothing. Like, you have to film the person just kind of sitting there for a minute, just doing nothing, to have enough beats to have them go like, wait, what? Like, you need all of that. So my passion and what I love doing is taking every single piece of the story and bringing it to life as a director. And I only produce so that I know that we have the time and space we need so that the crew can focus on their job so that we can bring the story to life and have a movie.
Do you edit too?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It helps. It really does. When you're directing and you have that editor's mindset, at least for me, like you're constantly like, okay, no, I can cut it here. Or, you know, like while I'm shooting, I'm thinking of all these different things that are going to be happening in the editing.
Yeah. Yeah. I production design. I can do hair and makeup. I was a trained gaffer years ago. So like, I'm not hip on like all the latest lights, like the geeky side of it, but like, I know how to properly light something. We just did a short, called Gone Gray that we, it was a 4-day shoot, and we did it as a filmmaker challenge. And my husband and I we're just kind of curious, like, what can we do when we have the time and space to do it? Because we'll do a lot of 48-hour film projects, which are great, don't get me wrong, but you can only do so much truly in 48 hours. Like, and we don't cheat. Like, I know some people that like come up with like some potential story ideas ahead of time. And then depending on what they get, they then write that script or they grab that script and use it. And I'm like, that's cheating.
It's cheating. Yeah.
But it's totally cheating. You're supposed to wait. So like, we wait until we have the genre, the prop, the character, the line of dialogue, and then we sit down and write it. Like, we don't even start. And we'll just know who our actors are. So and like what locations we have. So we'll write for that space and those people, but we don't preemptively do anything. And I think the closest we came once was we were doing one, and we knew we had the same actors from another one, and we were like, oh, we could do a sequel to the last one we did. But that was, we didn't go any further than that. It was just, we'll do a sequel. I don't know what it's going to be, but we'll just see what the prompts are, and if we can, we'll do a sequel. And we did. But for the 48, you have to like write, finish, cast, breakdown, shoot, edit, score, sound, color grade,
in export,
uplight in 48 hours. So it,
holy Christ,
it gets you to like break some of your habits, because when you're writing, you can't spend 3 days staring at a blank screen and walking around with your dog. You have to just sit down and write, and you can't spend forever agonizing over every syllable and punctuation. You have to stop and say, okay, this is the dialogue, this is what we're doing, this is where we're
going. You have to cut yourself off at some point and be like, okay, yeah, this needs to get done.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to be on set. And one of the things that I say is so important as a director and a producer, you have to know what shots you can cut, because if you are running out of time, you have to know, okay, we've got 7 shots left. We don't have time for all of those. Which shots can I remove and keep the story? You know, we're shooting in 4K. Maybe I just shoot a wide and I can punch in post. Maybe, and I don't need as much coverage. Maybe instead of doing, you know, this many oners, I shoot them all dirty and that's it. And we're done. Like, you have to be able to on the fly go, whoa, wait, that shot, if we don't get that shot, we're screwed.
That's, it's not going to make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it just breaks apart.
And as a producer, you have to know that too. Cause if your director comes to you and they're like, we're cutting scene, you know, X, Y, Z, you have to, as a producer, and be like, Z is like when the Titanic sinks and this is the movie Titanic. So I kind of need you to tell me what we're going to do. And you have to be able to have that conversation with the director and say, you know, I get it. I need you to help me understand, how are you going to tell this story without that shot? I totally support what you're doing. I just need to understand where you're coming from. And as a director, you have to be able to say, either crap, you're right, and figure it out, or you have to be able to explain yourself and say, okay, we're not going to do this shot. I'm going to do this shot, and this shot, or have a good enough rapport between the producer and director where the director can just say, it's going to take me too long to explain, and I got this. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, just trust me.
You know, just trust me. Because sometimes you don't have time on set to have those conversations either. And I had a DP once, super awesome dude. The AC was struggling. We couldn't get the focus. It was a sunset shot. The sun was moving. We couldn't stop the earth from turning. We didn't have that location again. Yeah. We couldn't do a pickup. We were going to lose it. And he came to me and he's like, I'm going to do something. I just need you to trust me. It's not going to be the shot that you want, but it's going to be a shot that you need. And I said, go for it. And he was right. Damn. That shot saved that moment because it was a vital shot that we needed. I didn't get the full dramatic effect that I wanted of like this super wide whatever, because there wasn't enough light. He needed to be closer to the light source and whatever. Technical stuff doesn't matter. But I knew him and trusted him enough that all he had to say was, and literally I'm like watching, you know, like when the sun is so close to setting, you can like practically see it moving.
You can literally see it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, go for it. Just do it. And you have to have that. That relationship can be really important, but
it is.
So
normally work with the same crew, the same
as much as I can, just because it helps to have those relationships. It depends on the budget. That DP is a very amazing high-end DP, and I wouldn't like do a 48-hour film project with him. Spacey and I shoot a lot of our own stuff. We're both camera ops. We're both DPs. Like, so we'll do a lot of our own filming as well. For something like a 48, it's great because we can go in with like a kind of small cast and crew and kind of like just fly around and just do it all. For Gone Grey, it was a timed challenge, but we had like 4 or 5 months. And I was like, where's the challenge part? But no, I'm kidding. That's hard, especially if you've never done a short before, which a lot of the people who do these, you know, it's their first time or second or third time or something like that. And we had to lock this. And it's same thing, though. We have to lock the script for the deadline. So we picked a genre because it gives you an option of ABC. We picked a genre that we've never done before, which was a spy film, which was a challenge for us. So we were like, okay. So we started writing the script and Spacey was writing it and he was like, I have no idea sometimes you're writing and you're just like, oh, it's getting too long. I need to end it. You're just like, write an ending. You're like, okay, there. And I was like, that's actually amazing. Like, I loved the idea that he had for the story. And then we write back and forth. So like he did a pass and then I did a pass and then he did a pass and then I did a pass. And then we sent it to one of our partners, this guy named Nick, brilliant writer. And he did some notes and I was like, I did a pass and then Spacey did a pass, you know, kind of did a pass. And then we're running out of time. And I should be clear, Nick's notes were awesome. I was like not happy with like where we were at on it. I knew we weren't done. So we just kept going back and forth, the three of us of like, whatever. To be clear, Nick didn't actually write any of the script. He just gave us notes. So if anybody sees that he's not a credited writer, that's why. He's an associate producer. He helped us develop it. But we turned in the script in, I think the deadline was like February. And then the film was due April 10th. So like 2 days ago. You aren't allowed to start filming until you get the notification that you're accepted. The script was accepted because there's two kind of like entry points. So our script was accepted and then we had to start casting and crewing and finding locations. And this is something we've never done before. There's like, you know, a high rise building in a big city and like a parking garage and an interrogation room and this like office building. There's like all these locations and I'm not like, we're not local. So it was like we could just call up a friend and be like, hey, can we use your this or hey, can we use your that? So we wanted to challenge ourselves, not just with the genre, but we wanted to see what we could do without, I'm trying to think if we bought a couple of things, but for the most part, we just used our lights, our cameras, our lenses. We've got this amazing old CCTV lens that we got for like $25 on Amazon. And we've been wanting to use it for like a big project, but you can't like do a client thing with that lens and be like, what are you doing?
Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. So, and we didn't know if it was going to work. So we figured this is for us. We don't care. And we took it one step further. We were the only crew, like trained crew on set. We had, one of our company interns she's a film student at Full Sail. She's on a producer track and she's awesome. We had her come PA for a couple days. And then my assistant Jazz came out for a day and she's anything art department, set dressing, just general set goddess. She's just like an extra set of hands, like flying around like a little busy bee.
I gotta meet her because I've communicated with her a couple times, but she seems like a really cool person.
She really is. She's like the best human. Like everybody who meets her, like just wants to like take her home and like keep her. Like like she's like a little pixie. You just want to like have her around. So we had her on set, and I mean, it's kind of not fair saying that it was just, you know, me and Spacey as like the crew with her for one day, cause she's like worth 10 people and Megan's worth another 10 people, but we didn't have a DP or a, you know, sound tech or a gaffer or a production designer or wardrobe stylist or hairstylist or makeup artist or craft services person or, camera ops or grips or anything. We had none of that. It was just me and Spacey. We wanted to see what can we do with just us. We did determine, because there was one day of filming where we had nobody but us. It's a lot. Having one PA, just one person, one more person to grab something, to go get something, it just is the difference between the camera op putting down the camera, having to go get it and coming back, and being there and saying, hey, can you go grab the blah, 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 while you're still continuing to go.
In it, yeah.
So it definitely was, we learned that the two of us can do a lot, but having just one more person makes a huge difference. All the exterior stuff that we shot, it was just him and I kind of AB camming. And then we had Megan as a PA helping, and she was like, even just like somebody just hold something for you. Like, you don't have to like put it down. Where did it go? You just like hand it to her and she just has it and then gives it back to you.
It's
like,
there. Yeah.
Just like magic. And so that project was, like part of me kind of feels bad because we are a little more advanced than a lot of the other filmmaking teams, but we kind of gave ourselves a handicap in that we didn't take any other crew. We just said, what can we do? Just the two of us. And it was intense. And then we edited it.
You like the challenge.
You know? Yeah. And we like started our assembly cut and everything was going great. And then I sprained my hand and that sucked. And so I wasn't able to edit for a little bit. And then our drive crashed and we lost all of our footage. And then we went to Dropbox to our backup and all the footage was gone somehow. Like we were missing. We had like 2 days of footage and that was it. And then we found out about Dropbox Rewind, which was a lifesaver. We were able to rewind it. And then we were able to recover the drive too. So we had it doubly. And then we like extra backed it up just to be super safe. And then...
You always go through that before you invest in backup equipment.
No, but the thing that what we had a backup, we had our drive, we had it backed up to Dropbox and both of them went out. And I was like, what is happening? The universe does not want us to make this movie. Or it does. And it's just saying, hey, this is going to be amazing and you got to work for it.
It's going to be important. Yeah.
Right. And we literally ended up finishing. It was due at midnight on I guess April 11th. So April 10th, as soon as the clock struck midnight, it was done. We finished and hit upload at 11:56 p.m.
Get out of here.
April 10th. And Spacey was like, I worked so hard to make sure that we were ahead of schedule. And it's true. He did a lot of work, but it was just like everything just kept going wrong. And but we got it in. We just got notified today that it's an official selection, so it'll be screening on May 21st at the AMC in Altamont Springs.
Congrats.
Fancy.
Hell yeah.
It's always good doing these film challenges because like it forces you to make a decision. And he and I co-directed it. And the way we co-direct, one person is 51% and one person is 49%. because I really feel like directors are the keeper of the story. That's their job. And if you have too many cooks in that kitchen, you end up with like, I'm going to mix metaphors. You end up with Sleeping Beauty's pink and blue dress of just like chaos. And you need one person kind of driving the ship. And it's interesting co-directing because like, I don't make a choice off of what I think. I make a choice off of what I know he wants for the story. So it kind of is cool because it gives you like this sort of empowered kind of like assistance, you know, like you're lifting somebody else up. And it can almost be easier sometimes because you don't have to think, oh, what would I do and come up with an idea? You just have to understand what they want and then go, okay, how do I make that happen? The only time it's complicated is if you misunderstand or if you don't understand and you have to understand. And it's kind of like, I want to do this for you. I just don't know what you want. and it's cool because I do have like 49% as a director. So like he'll tell me, okay, this is what I want from the actors. This is kind of the vibe. And then I'll go in there with them and have the conversations of like, okay, you're a this and a that, and this is where we're at emotionally. And this is where we're going. And this is why. And I'll kind of look at him and he'll be like, okay, good. And like, I know, I'll keep like making sure. So it's a cool kind of like wave. Whereas when I'm directing by myself, it's like, I have to come up with everything, you know, in my head. I think we're better as a team personally. Nice. But yeah.
Is that the project that you just finished this
yeah.
month?
Yeah. The Gone Grey. The trailer's nice. Out. Nice.
We're tired of games. We're tired of waiting.
So why don't you do us both a favor? And give up.
We both know a lot about giving up, don't we?
Done?
I don't think we can release it anywhere until after it premieres, but as soon as tickets are on sale, I can let you know. We're not selling them. The people they're renting, they're doing it at an AMC, so like you like can get tickets to it and stuff like that. It's going to be an all day thing. But
where is it going to be at?
Altamont Springs.
Is that okay. Place?
Okay. Yeah. It's near Orlando, right?
Is that a place?
I feel bad because like I have like limited. I know a lot of Florida geography, but I have some limited. Like, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. I got to get tickets for that.
I'll let you know as soon as they we're waiting to find out when they list it. But yeah, it's going to be super cool. Like I've seen some of the other projects. There's three genres: spy, comedy, and drama.
Okay.
So, and I think there's 39 films total. So it's a good.
Yeah, it's a good mix.
Yeah. It's going to be, I think the screening goes for about 7.5 hours, not straight. There's like three screening blocks. And they're having like an awards thing that night and like an after party. And like, it's just going to be, it'll be cool to meet everybody too. Cause like, we helped connect one of the other projects to an editor. But we haven't been able to see anything on it yet. And then, I was mentoring one of the other directors, who did it, even just from what I've seen, she did like such an amazing job. I'm like floored, but I did a little bit of acting when I was in LA, just kind of like for fun and for money, which sounds weird, but like if you don't care what roles you're going out for, you're just kind of like randomly submitting, it's really easy to get work. I don't know how to describe it, but like I would get booked all the time. My actor friends were like, how do you have another audition? And I'm like, because I don't care, like I don't want to do this. It's just
I'm not picky.
Yeah, I'm just doing it, You know, I only submit to ones that I know I can get. I'm not challenging myself. I'm not reaching for anything. I'm just like, yeah, that's easy. I can do that. and it's funny because for this, I was like, oh, this will be fun because it's a group. It's the Organization of Independent Filmmakers, and they're all, it's kind of like a community. There's like a Facebook group, and they're like casting calls, and you're allowed to be in a certain number of films. So like people submit to multiple projects, and like this person will be doing their own film, but they'll be starring in this person's film, and they'll be, you know, editing that person's film. And like, so it's really a community thing, which is kind of fun.
That's cool.
I think all of our actors are in other movies, like other projects. So I was like, ah, you know, why not? And I auditioned for a couple, like I submitted to a couple of the other projects. And it's funny, the only one that I actually really wanted, I was like, oh, this would be a really cool role. This would be really fun. It's the only one I didn't get. But all the other ones I was asked to audition, one of them, I got like pink eye and I wasn't able to record for it. And then, or I had like a sty or something, my eye was like all infected. And then the other ones I got cast in them because it was just like fun. And so I'm in one of the comedies. I have like a small part in the like very beginning, but I haven't, we filmed it for them. So I haven't even met anybody like on the cast or crew. So like, we're gonna be able to go to the premiere and like meet the director who directed me over the phone and I never met her. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I love stuff like that where it's about telling stories and like challenging yourself and finding ways to do things and having the space to be kind of think outside the box, no pun intended, but, no pun intended. also to kind of be moved along a path. Like it's so easy,
creative,
you know? Yeah. And like, it also makes you actually get there because if you're just going to stare at a script for the rest of your life, you're never going to finish it. You can rewrite. We could rewrite Names on the Wall today. The movie's on Amazon. Like, we need to let it go.
Yeah.
But to this day, there's things we could have done differently. I mean, it's one of our best films. I'm not going to lie. But there's things we could have done differently.
Is that the one that you're most proud of?
Before Gone Grey, yeah. I think Gone Grey, I'm scared. I don't want to jinx it. But Gone Grey came out. Really, like, I'm really proud of us, especially considering what we were working with and what we had to go through from development all the way through. We had like casting changes and then schedule changes. So then we lost other casts and then we had to recast them. And it was just like this frantic and we didn't have locations. Then we got locations and we lost locations. And it was just like,
wow.
But the, that is one of the nice things about like big studio productions is like, you know, you're on a location contract, you paid a location fee, you own the space during that time. It's very, we just had like a verbal, yeah, it's fine, you can come back at this time and film. And I was like, great.
Sure.
But it, and in my head, I was like, ugh, that's why I tell people you need to get a contract signed in advance, not in the moment. But we worked it out. But it makes you move through the process and it stops. It makes you make some decisions and make some choices, which is the hardest part as an artist. Like, I joke around that coloring books are too stressful for me because you have to pick a color. And as soon as you color, that's it. Can't change your mind. I'm like, that's too much commitment. My coloring book is asking too much commitment from me. I need one of those coloring books where it's like the same picture on every page. I can just color it differently each way.
Differently every time. Yeah.
What if that flower was supposed to be orange and I colored it blue and now it's just orange forever or it's blue forever. But it, as a creative, it can be, it's kind of why I don't like digital art as much as I like physical art. Cause you know, when you're painting an acrylic painting, you can't just press Control Z if you don't like how it came out. You put that brush on that canvas and that is what you have.
And that's it.
It's why a lot of practical things, I kind of appreciate them a little more.
Do you paint too?
What?
Do you paint too?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. You're just creative all around.
It's weird.
You draw, you sketch.
Well, I mean, I have a background as a production designer, so you kind of have to have some drawing capabilities. But we actually have an Etsy shop where we sell watercolor paintings. But we switched to making masks during the pandemic. So it's kind of, we haven't really touched it since because I got busy. But yeah, we do paintings on like wooden boxes and like ornaments and like wall hangings and stuff. So it's like the painting is on wood, on pieces of wood. So it's like a little different than just like something you hang. It's like a jewelry box or a keepsake box or something that you can like have. So different story. But yeah, I'm talking a lot. What else do you want to know?
No, that's cool. I love it. I love hearing your story. What let's talk about your awards.
Okay. I was told once by a man whose voice echoes in my head for eternity. His name is Rick. He is a wonderful human being and filmmaker. He said to me once, never apologize for your success. Men don't.
Oh, I love that.
And every time I get like squirmy, like, I don't know, I'm supposed to be like, I don't know, awkward. I hear him in my head, men don't. And I'm like,
yeah. Unapologetically.
Be proud. Which award would you like me to
talk? What was your first one? What's the first award that you, like your first film that you ever won an award for?
Names on the Wall.
Names on the Wall. What was it for?
The first award for that film or the awards for that film?
Oh, you won multiple.
We've won, I think, almost 30 since 2016. So, yeah.
Not on Names on the Wall. Show? What
for all of them. So, yeah. So for Names on the Wall, the first festival it screened at, it was nominated for Best Period Piece, Best Drama, Best Drama Short, and Best... there was like a kind of jury prize type thing for excellence in filmmaking in a major genre. And we were nominated for those three. And what's funny is because I was originally supposed to production design that, and I put a lot of work into the production design, and I was so proud of us for the production design, we won Best Drama Short and we won the award for excellence in filmmaking in a major genre. But we didn't win Best Period Piece. And to this day, I'm so sad. That was the one that I wanted.
That's the one it needed.
I'm like, I wanted the period. I mean, although someone pointed out to me that the excellence in filmmaking, that's kind of the whole... They're like, you were the director and producer.
That's all you, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we had the co-writer helped produce it with me. And he did a lot of the research on the like... Vietnam authenticity and the things that we kind of could sort of fudge and how we could, because we did not have a big budget for that. So the first ones that we won were the Best Drama Short and the Excellence in Filmmaking in a Major Genre. And then the next one that we won.
That had to feel good.
When I walked on stage, I literally said to the like guy handing me the award, I said, really?
This is mine?
And he was like, yes.
That is so cool.
So it was my very first awards dinner, my first film festival like that I went to as a filmmaker, like where I was like, it was my film. I'd been to like the Holly Reel Shorts Festival or something in LA for like a music video that I designed, but it wasn't, or I like set dressed or something like that. But I wasn't like, you know, the producer, where it was like my film. We made that movie and it was so much work and we put so much into it and poured our hearts and souls, which I know everybody does. Like, no.
And it shows. I mean, if you won all these awards, I mean, that's kind of, I would have been hooked at that point.
It kind of is what made it what it is. So In 2016, we won Best Drama Short and the Award for Excellence in Filmmaking in a Major Genre. And then in 2017, we tied for the Audience Choice Award for Best Short. And what's funny is the film we tied for, I voted for. And one of my friends was like, don't vote for, like vote for your film. And I was like, but they were so good. And to this day, and what's funny is that one of the like festival, like volunteers had met us and talked to us and thought we were really cool and kind of like to help us out. He voted for our film too. And he told me, he's like, I voted for your film. And I was like, you didn't get to see it. And he's like, ah, you know, you guys are great. I just wanted to support you. And then he came to me later and he said, hey, just so you know, I didn't feel right because it meant you were going to beat this other film. And he said, so I took my vote off. So, and that's why you tied. And I feel kind of bad, but I also wanted to tell you. And I was like, dude, I would feel awful if we won because you didn't actually see our film. Yeah. You know, like I want to vote on merit. Like if you go watch our film and you're like, no, man, leave my vote. That's different. But if you still haven't watched it, thank you. Like, honestly, thank you. I feel so much better about that. And I almost didn't vote for the other film because somebody tried to talk me out of it. But I was like, no, this film is amazing. And you were allowed to vote for like your top three. So I voted for Us, Them, and like one other one that I really liked. And we ended up tying with them. And to this day, I keep thinking about how, like, if it wasn't for integrity, that other film would have lost twice. And the filmmakers weren't there. I reached out to them on like social media or something. And I was like, hey, I loved your film. You know, I actually voted for, I'm the filmmaker we tied with, you know, and they never answered me. And I was like, you made a great movie. But so anyway, that every time I see that Audience Choice Award, it always like stirs up emotions. But it's cool because I know we tied honorably. And that feels so much better to me than tying dishonorably. You know?
Yeah, no, for sure.
So, and then I won Best Director for that.
On that one?
Blew my mind. And then we won Best Short at another festival. Because it had kind of taken the festival world by storm, we were like, okay, let's see what else we can do. And I did my second film, which was this half live action, half animation, just to kind of try something new. Mm-hmm. And that won Best Animation.
Nice.
And then a film my husband had done won Best Animation as well that same year. And then we started just kind of like making movies like crazy to where we would submit 2, 3, 4 films to a festival at once and start getting multiple films in we would, like, we were just in competition with ourselves for Best Music Video because we
pretty
had
much
two.
Yeah.
And we're like, I mean, there's other films as well, but like, we were not just competing against other people. We were also competing against ourselves.
With
and we were
other,
like,
yeah.
Okay. But one time it was I directed and he directed, but this one, they were both ones that I had directed. So it was just kind of funny. In 2019, I won an award called the Miko Award, which is given at a festival in Las Vegas. And it's for innovation, courage, and excellence in a career in film.
Wow.
So that was cool.
Nice. Is that the one that you're most proud of?
Yeah. Because the reason I'm most proud of it is because the person who nominated me, like put me on the shortlist, didn't know that I had just started working in film like fully 3 years earlier. They thought that I was a seasoned veteran filmmaker, which is who the award is for. And they found out after I won.
Wow.
So it was kind of like, should I not, like, I'm like, do I have to give it back? Like, I that's like, they're like, it's for a career in film. Like, I thought you had a career just because we'd put out so much content we'd done, and not like TikTok content. Like, we'd done film after film after film after film. And we had such a, like,
you just had much of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like all the awards that I mentioned that we'd already won all of those. Like, and that doesn't include any of the nominations. We've gotten like, I think 80 just, so it was a lot. And they said, don't take it like you didn't deserve it yet. Just keep earning it. And so the reason I'm the most proud of it is because it's not, awards are like the period at the end of the sentence. For me, that award is like the door opening to the stairs that continue to go up. not like it's a door opening, but it's more like the light shining, like, okay, this is where you have to keep going. Like everywhere, like I go, everything I do, especially in like any of the indie circles where they know about the Miko Award, like I'm a Miko Award winner and I have to live up to that. And wow. So it kind of keeps me dedicated, I guess. And it's,
yeah, to earn it.
Yeah. So it's like, I have to have a career in I have to have an innovative, what are the words? Courageous and excellent career in film now, because because I already got my award. So
your filmography is getting pretty up there.
I have to like continue. So it, I'm probably the most proud of that because it was very humbling to even be listed for it. And I didn't really know what it was when I was shortlisted. And then I was at another festival and I met somebody and I said, oh, you know, hi, I'm Cora. And he was like, wait, he was like, you're one of the Miko Award nominees. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
And they were like, wow. And I was like, okay. It was awkward. Like, I was like, I'd only been doing this for a couple of years. And I was like, and then when I won, it was, they shortlist and I think they pick like three or something. So it was me and like two other people. Mm-hmm. And then when I got it, I'm going to cry. It came with a card, like when they shipped it to me. And it just said, believe in heroes. And, I don't know, it just really inspired. Like it was kind of like somebody coming along who has, I don't know if he ever listens to this, he's going to be like, but I've never even come close to winning an Academy Award, but I don't know if I would feel the same way about an Academy Award, because an Academy Award says you did it. This to me feels like someone believes I can do it and they want me to keep doing it. And like they've become Mr. Miko has become like a mentor and friend over the years. And like whenever I'm like, you know, dealing with a bunch of stuff and I'm just like, okay, I'm like, I can do it. And he's like, didn't give you the Miko Award for nothing. You know, like it's just, he'll joke around about
that's
it.
That's validation. Yeah.
It's, but it just, he's like, of course you can, you're a Miko Award winner. And it just, it like sits with me and reminds me whenever I see it in my office, it's just this like really beautiful glass, like pyramid that just is very like it. The award itself has the confidence and grace that I aspire to one day have myself.
Nice. I like that. So, do you aspire to get an Oscar? I know. Yeah, I kind of have the same sentiment.
So, on the one hand, like, I have friends who vote in the Academy and who mm-hmm. are, like, you know, in that world, which still blows my mind that I can say that I know people like that. On the one hand, there's like the Academy, which I have opinions about. And then there's the fact that it is an organization of your peers. It's like winning a Grammy. Like the people who vote on the Grammy are musicians. Like there are other people who work in the music world. And yes, yeah. There's the PR and the promotion and all that stuff and the nepotism and whatever. But at the end of the day, there's people who have won who really deserved it. And I mean, Coda is one of the most amazing movies I've ever seen in my life. I agree. You know, we saw it when it premiered at Sundance and it was amazing. And the fact to know that it won an award and what that means for the deaf community and what that means for just disabled filmmakers in general, like there's so many doors that movie blew open and so many conversations it started, good and bad, you know, people who are like, why is it focused around a hearing girl if it's about, you know, it should be about deaf people or whatever? Or like, why was it directed by a hearing person? Which is all, they're all valid questions and they're all conversations that need to be happening. At the same time, it's about a child of a deaf adult, which is a very specific community and a very specific lifestyle and what that means. And it's a whole thing. I'm not super qualified to speak on it because I'm not part of the deaf or hard of hearing community. I do have a lot of friends who are, and so I know enough to know that I should probably stop talking, but it movies like that, even like Crip Camp got nominated for best documentary last year. The Oscar stage for the first time had a ramp. going up to the stage. And it should always have had that, because never even mind wheelchair users. What about people who are just older or who aren't physically able to walk upstairs? Like, why should they worry? There's an actor, I'm really bad at pronouncing names. He plays Lassiter on Psych. It's Tim Oldmanson, and I'm pronouncing that totally wrong. But he had a stroke years ago, and he's recovering. He's doing amazing. But when the director of Crip Camp posted the Emmy stage and said, you guys promised that the stage was going to be accessible, and you lied to me and you lied to my lawyers. Like, this is not an accessible stage.
It's not okay.
Tim commented, he's like, my only fear of winning an Emmy is how do I get on stage?
Wow.
Those stairs say, you're not welcome here. This space is not for you.
And it wasn't made for you and with you in mind.
Yeah, we don't care enough to figure out. And I do have a background as an event designer, and I understand that every single inch of a floor is designed down to a fire code. Every chair has to measure a certain distance from another chair, and the max capacity and how much space between this and that and walking room. Like, it is an algebraic equation. That's the wrong word. It's probably trigonometry or something. I don't know. I did not major in math. It is a mathematical nightmare to organize that ceiling height, everything. They, A, should have thought about it ahead of time. And B, they could have made that center stage a little bit smaller, the big actual standing on space. Mm-hmm. They could have made it a little bit smaller and made one of those sets of stairs a ramp. Would have been possible.
Yeah, it could always be done.
It's, you just have to figure it out. And if you're not willing to do that, it says, I'm sorry, you're not worth the time and money. And that anything is possible if somebody wants to do it. Literally anything. Somewhere there is somebody who has the power to say yes. Even if it goes all the way up to the Supreme Court. Yeah. At the top of the Supreme Court, there are justices that can sit there and say, actually, yes. Like, the power is there. Somebody can say yes if they want to, if it's worth it to them. And that is a whole separate soapbox that I will step down from, because I feel very, very strongly about that.
Well, hopefully one day we can see each other at the Oscar stage.
Oh yeah, you asked if I wanted to win an Oscar. I mean, I wouldn't be like, no. Like, if I won, I wouldn't like not show up. But I think what I was trying to say is, at the end of the day, there is something to be said for an acknowledgement that you've made it into a circle. But even then, it's like, well, you won one Oscar. Well, did you win an Emmy and a Tony and a Grammy too? Have you won 2 Oscars? Have you won 20 Oscars?
There's always, yeah.
You know,
there's
always, it's like, more. It's like, I'm not Meryl Streep, okay? Like, it's actually, I have no idea how many Oscars she's won, but she should have won all of them.
All of them.
You know, but it's, yeah. I stand with my stunt people. I think they deserve an Oscar category. I don't think the thing should have been cut that they were cut, as far as the live show. The show itself is becoming abhorrent, for lack of a better word.
Seriously.
The last show that
it's not even about the movies anymore. It's, yeah.
There was an opening with Neil Patrick Harris in, was it 2018? I don't remember. It was, I guess it was 2015. I mean, it did have a little politics. It started with him saying, tonight we honor the best and whitest, I mean brightest, which is true. He was making a point. Like, there was a massive lack of diversity in 2015. But the opening number that year was all about, why do we even do this? Why do we come here? Why do we make movies? What is it even for? And I get chills every time I see it. I probably should like just download the song and like put it on a playlist somewhere, but it, like, on my phone. But it, for that reason, I would love to know that I did something so impactful on the world that people felt like including me in that. But other than that,
like you said, I think you said it earlier, it's like, that's the mark of you've made it, you know?
Yeah, it's like an acknowledgement, but it's also like kind of like a period at the end of the sentence, like, good job, you did it. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, now what? They're like, now okay, do it now. Again. It's like, thanks. There's nothing above that. But yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. That is actually more than I was expecting, which is awesome.
I feel like I talk too much. I'm trying to think if I thought of anything that's like
important. You hit on your current project. You hit on all your awards. We had some good conversation about filmmaking. You opened my eyes about that one record app.
Hit record, yeah.
I love that, yeah.
I was saying on Hit Record, they pay you. They do a 50-50 split. So if a Hit Record project, like, you know, there was a TV show, there's the books, the live shows, all that stuff, whatever profit is made gets split, and 50% goes to the company and 50% gets split among all the contributing artists. And they're completely transparent about it. They do a breakdown of the profit proposal and how they are planning on splitting up. They name every single artist, what it was they contributed and what the proposed percentage is. They open it up to a conversation with the community where the community can say, looks great, or hang on, this person did a lot of work. Why are they only getting this little bit? And there's a dialogue about it, and then deadline comes and everybody gets their money.
No way. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's just imagine. Yeah,
definitely jumping on there.
I don't know what's happening with the paid projects right now, but there's a lot of just, they call them challenges now. It used to be called collaborations, which I liked better personally. But there's tons of stuff. There's videoing stuff. Go shoot video of this, edit this. You know, you can find people looking for editors, and it's an incredible way to meet people. Like some of my best friends, one of the vice president public relations of my company, I met her through Hit Record. My husband, I met him through Hit Record. One of my best friends, two of my best friends, I met them through Hit Record. So it's like-minded people who have that. I haven't been super active on it now, but yeah, that collaboration. It's gotten very saturated, I will say, unfortunately, with some, because like filmmaking is a lot about, unfortunately, the viewpoint is like, I need this, you need to do this for me. And Hit Record is about, let's do this together. What can we offer each other? And it tries to foster a space for that, where it's more about, like, you don't post stuff there to get people to look at it. You post it there to inspire people and get them to contribute or create or whatever. So I will say it is refreshing in that way, but there's been like tons of people who've joined over a lot of it.
Yeah.
There's all the like JGL fangirls and boys too, which is fun. But pro tip, don't call him that. That's not his name. he is a person with a very interesting job, and treat him like that. Yeah, collaboration, man. It's
that's why I started my podcast.
I'd be nowhere without it. Everything we do, every script, even scripts I've written, I have either direct co-writers or have associate producers who help me develop the story, or producers. I'm really lucky in that I kind of like, I love my husband, but he's kind of like, when we first met, he jokes that when he married me, he married the film industry, and he's not. Exactly.
That's kind of how it is. Yeah. When you marry a creative, you kind of, you're all in.
But the thing is, he was a documentary filmmaker before. Like, he directed and produced feature. You know, he's done it. He's done documentary shorts and he's done music and stuff. He's a huge, his name is Spaceship. I am spaceship.bandcamp.com. You can check him out. He is brilliant. You should. He's not an on-camera guy, and he's not a talker.
No.
He does not like the podcast. He has a podcast called the Disney Positive Podcast, where he finds people who he thinks has a positive impact on the world, and he makes them talk about Disney.
Nice.
He talks about them a little bit, talks about how they feel about Disney, and then he has the wheel of Disney positivity that he spins. And they, when it lands on something that he has them talk about that topic. It's a great show. I love it. But that's it. And it's all like no video. It's just talking.
Oh, okay.
And then he edits my podcast, the Filmmaking Actually podcast.
But that's going to be my next question. Where can everybody find your stuff online?
Filmmaking Actually is our podcast on our like sponsor platform is Anchor, but you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the podcasts. And then we are Space Dream Productions on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. We just started TikTok. I'm figuring it out. But go ahead and follow us. It'll be fun. You can watch us struggle and laugh at us. I'm just kidding. No, we've got some cool stuff there already, and we have some more cool stuff coming, and it's going to be – we will be making fun of vertical video, just a warning. But
– I love it.
Your eyes are horizontal. Just saying. Turn your phone. You have thumbs. Sorry. I feel very strongly about these like vertical video crops where it's like wasn't filmed for vertical video and they're like, here's a nose. Anyway, so yeah, follow us on TikTok. It'll be great. It's just, anyway.
That's a thing though.
It really is. People, apparently it's too much effort to do this.
Yeah. They just want to hold it one handed and not
but you can
make an effort.
Come on. You have a thumb. You literally have a thumb. It's this, which is technically harder, or this, which is actually easier. Just saying. Just saying. It's my vertical video rant. Ow, that landed on my bad hand.
I think that's the one that's going to go viral.
That one. I should just do that as a TikTok. Like, it's like that kid who's like, to like people making things needlessly. Needlessly, yeah. Needlessly difficult. So that's Space Dream Productions. We are Catching the Light movie on Instagram for our Catching the Light. It's our feature that we're wrapping up in post. That was an exciting, that's a whole separate podcast interview.
Do you have anything on like Amazon Video or Netflix or anything?
Names on the Wall is on Amazon. And the Facebook page is Names on the Wall. And then Comic Relief, it's Comic Relief Movie, I think, on Instagram. And it's Comic Relief Movie, I think, on Facebook, too. And that one actually just got the Big Sky grant from the Montana Film Office, which we are
$50,000. You guys are killing it.
It's been so much work. This is my day job. I work like 80, 90 hours a week. Even if I'm like exhausted laying in bed, I really do.
You love it. You can tell me like, I can see the passion in your face. I love it.
It's, I don't know. Filmmakers get to make a universe out of the air. You know, like this doesn't exist. None of this is real. But it could be, or maybe it was once, and it hopefully it helps people see another side of humanity that maybe they never thought about, or see something in themselves, or see something in somebody else in a way that they wouldn't have thought to look. Maybe it is an escape for them for a couple minutes from their world. Maybe it makes them question something a little differently. Maybe it makes them think about something. Maybe it inspires them. Maybe they disagree with the way we presented it and they want to present their side, which that's like the point, you know. It's, I say, filmmakers are ambassadors of humanity, and, you know, ambassadors come from different places. They're not coming from the same place. And it's usually thinking, oh, I'm the ambassador of Paris or the ambassador of Spain or, you know. But when you're the ambassador of humanity, like, you're coming from your place in humanity to showcase a piece that somebody may not otherwise see. And that's why things like accessibility mean so much to me, because if you don't include everybody, you're not sharing all the stories and you're painting a narrative that is very limited. Instead,
it's exclusive and not inclusive.
Yeah. And it doesn't help anybody. How are you going to be inspired? Like, on the one hand, just blanket overall teach people, you don't have to see something to dream it or to think it or to come up with it or to do it or to try it. If you've never seen someone who looks like you do something that you want to do, that means that no one has done it yet. So you need to do it. Don't make an excuse that you've never seen it, so therefore you can't do it. You need to do it. You are the one because you thought of it. At the same time, there does also need to be a normalization of cast and crew and abilities and skin color and religion and, you know, genders and like all this stuff. Not in a, what is it? A trite poem of good intentions, but someone said something once, I don't remember the exact words, but they said it in such a great way, where it's not like words, but where it's just natural. Like Gone Grey, when we were looking at our cast, we're like, oh, we have a diverse cast. Like, it just happened that way. We just put out a casting call, casted it, but we didn't try. I didn't go like, wait, blonde girl, check. This girl, check. Yeah. That girl, check. You know, we
it's
just...
It's not a checklist.
No, we just cast it. And we lost some of our cast. And we, you know, I had a friend and I was like, hey, are you available? Because she'd be great for it. And she was like, yeah, no problem. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. Because we were supposed to have 5 operatives. We ended up with 3, which... sucked, but it worked for what we had. It worked for the story, and if it wasn't for her, we wouldn't have even had the story at all. So I'm super, super thankful. And she was a great actress, so I knew she could do it. Everybody else auditioned, they did callbacks, they did, you know, like they went through the process, and
you just pick the best people.
And if your auditions are not bringing in diverse people, you need to change the wording mm-hmm. on your casting call. And if it's not like our Vietnam War movie, when we cast the Vietnamese soldier, we said Vietnamese man aged blonde, you know, like very that specific. Was the casting call, you know. And if, you know, anybody else submitted who wasn't actually Vietnamese, we didn't even call them in because there wasn't going to be anybody else fighting for North Vietnam, like in the actual Vietnam War in the jungle at that point. Yeah. Where we were
kind of
showing the story.
A little bit of authenticity, yeah.
And just like, you're making a Vietnam War movie and you're not casting a Vietnamese person. I will say that the person we found, we didn't know this when we cast him, he's from South Vietnam, but in Vietnam, accents are kind of like in America, like people from the South are considered almost uneducated. Like a Southern accent is kind of like the uneducated accent, and the Northern accent is considered more educated, which is garbage, but... Wow. So when he was little, his dad sent him to school in the North so that he would have a Northern accent so he could go further in life, basically. So he not only spoke Vietnamese, he spoke Vietnamese with a Northern accent, which is what we needed because, I mean, no one watching the movie who isn't Vietnamese is going to know what accent Vietnamese this guy is speaking. Yeah. I don't speak Vietnamese, so maybe he was just saying that, but we'd already cast him. He didn't need to lie, so I trust him. But like that type of thing, you know, our American soldier, we did cast a white guy just because there were more white soldiers at that time. And I felt like it added a lot of, cause race is one of the things that plays in the story, obviously. It was a war of governments, but this is a story of soldiers. And when it starts, you know, they want to kill each other and he hates him because he's white and he hates him because he's Vietnamese. And that's kind of where they're at. And the white guy is a racist jerk. Like it's kind of, and the Vietnamese guy hates the white guy. And that's kind of what we're all programmed to do. And it isn't a racial PSA. It isn't something that ends as you would expect it to. It shakes people up. And I love that. We've never been in a screening where somebody hasn't screamed like or gasped or gone, what? Or like at a very specific part, which makes me really happy as a filmmaker. Yes.
I was sitting in the back of the theater watching it happen.
but it's really easy to look at your characters and say, why is this person this color? Oh, because we need diversity. Okay, so why is that person that color? Why don't you just make it that person? Cast whoever shows up. And then when you're done, because we've been there too, you know, we're down to our last like 3 or 4 people and we're looking like, okay, who really was the best person? These two were awesome. This person looks exactly like our lead actress. Let's go with this person so that we do have a little bit more dynamic. Also, you don't want someone who looks just like your lead. Cause that's confusing unless they're related, you know, if they're not related, they shouldn't look alike. Like mix it up a little bit.
Confuses the audience, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's my mom's pet peeve in like TV shows. Like she's gone to watch stuff and she's like, oh, I can't watch that. I'm like, why? And she's like, everybody looks the same. I have no idea who's who. And I'm like, Mom.
It's a problem.
It is. She's like, I can't follow the story. I don't know who anybody is. And I'm like, and to be clear, that's not a racial thing. That's literally any TV show. Like it could be all white people. And she'll be like, I don't know who they are.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's,
yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I went on a rant. But the point is that it's so, if you let yourself break away from the studio clutches, if you let yourself stop being told by sales agents, I can only sell this for $1 million, so you better make it for like 500, 750 tops if you want to break even. To me says, isn't your job sales? So what you're telling me is if you do nothing, if you just do the bare minimum of your job, reach out to the people who you know, do, you know, do, it's work, it's work. But if you just clock in and show up and send some emails and make some calls, you can sell it for that much. So yeah. I need to beg, barter, steal, cry, prostitute myself as a creative, make all of my friends work for free, get donations, go crazy, be late on my rent, do all this stuff so that when you sell it, you have a guaranteed sale. Is that what you just said?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because what I feel like you should say is, what's your marketing budget? Because this is going to be a little harder. We're going to need more money to make sure that we've got the ground to run the marketing for this to really get people interested. That's what you should be saying, not make it for 750. You need to tell me make it for 1.5 million because you need a $500,000 marketing budget if you want this to go anywhere.
Yeah, that's different.
That's what you need to say because you are the sales rep. Selling is your job. If you can't sell it, that's not my problem. That's yours. And if you can't find something about it to sell, still not my problem. Still yours. So that it's a very crippling part of the film industry that I feel very passionately about. And I'm still talking. You have me on caffeine because I didn't have a lot of sleep. So I'm like buzzed. So I'm going to like...
No, that was perfect. I think that's a perfect point to end it on. That was great. You already said your social media, but go ahead and repeat it just because it's the end of the episode.
We're launching a Patreon, a Space Dream Productions Patreon, and it's going to be a kind of an artistic community in that it's not tiered. Like you don't get more stuff for giving more money. The only difference is basically it's $1.99 is the lowest tier. And that gives you access to everything. So like, we're going to do stuff like I'll break down an audition tape with an actor. Like they can come in, they can do a monologue. I'll give them notes. We'll do it live. We'll take a Zoom. We'll do a Zoom. We'll take Q&A questions. Like it'll be like a thing. We'll read log lines for scripts and break them down and like discuss it with writers and let people do a Q&A. We'll do AMAs. We'll do all that stuff. The $1.99 tier, you can access it afterwards. When it goes up, you can watch it all. The podcast will never be behind a paywall because I think that general knowledge should be free. And hopefully, you know, hopefully people will use the knowledge, do better, and then they can afford to buy stuff from us. But the way we looked at it is if you can't afford $1.99, if you're in a country where $1.99 US is literally like cost prohibitive, then like message us. But if you're... I've definitely been in a situation where I barely had a dollar, but I usually could figure out that much. Like it may mean, you know, not having coffee for a day or not doing something, but like something that's really important. Sorry, I'm going on to the topic. People have to come to the table too. Like it's a give and take. You cannot exist in the film world if you're going to sit there and say, you have to come to me. There needs to be a mutual coming.
Yeah.
Two-way. So we figured $1.99, that's like one single on iTunes or, you know, it's not even a Redbox rental. Like it's one thing. And if you're going to work in film, if you can't afford $1.99 a month, you probably should focus on that first. And I do have podcast episodes about negotiating rates and about business and all that stuff. So you can get that for free. But so for $1.99, you can access the content, you can hang out, you can see what we're doing, you can do all that stuff. And then the first tier, I think, is $15. And that gives you access to everything, but it also gives you access to us. It lets you submit your log line for a review. It lets you submit yourself to do a self-tape and have an acting consultation. It lets you like have access to all that stuff. And then the tiers above that, there's a $25 tier and a $50 tier. And that's just because some people are better off than others. And if you have the means and you can support more, awesome. If you don't and you can't, $1.99. Like, it's like we're trying to be as accessible as possible. Yeah. And we hope that people who can afford more do, because it's going to be a lot of work. But this is what I'm going to end on. I believe that filmmaking is not about money. It's about knowledge and skill. And Gone Grey was kind of a test for that. Yeah, it cost some money. We spent, you know, a couple hundred bucks on everything. We spent less than $1,000 on it. Not the value. If you add up our gear and our wardrobe and our makeup and all the stuff that we brought, it's right. Thousands and thousands of dollars. But the actual cash that it cost us out of pocket was a couple hundred dollars. And that in gas and food and that a couple key props that we needed. It's not about how much money you have, and it's never about how much money you have. It's not even about the gear that you have. We used a CCTV lens on purpose. Like, yeah. A, because it's gorgeous, and B, because it was $25 on Amazon. Like, stop being overwhelmed by people with podcasts and vlogs that tell
they
you
they got the most expensive crap. Yeah.
One of our worst films, literally worst experiences, was with a producer who came to us telling us how they had all of this gear and top of the line this and all of this stuff. And when we got there, they had no idea how to use any of it. It was still in boxes. The mics didn't even connect to the cameras. Like, the audio was a mess. It was horrible. The whole shoot was like one of the worst days of my life on set, which is saying something. And it was because it was the gear and not the knowledge. Filmmakers need skill and talent and creativity and resourcefulness, but they also need knowledge. And if you are willing to stop and think, how can I do this? How can I make this work? I mean, one day I'll do a breakdown on Gone Grey for like some of the effects that we did. I know that if I were to have gone to like our VFX guy who works for one of the top VFX houses, like, we wanted him to help on a feature and he couldn't because he was finishing Spider-Man No Way Home. Like, that level of work, his workflow and his process is much different because they have the resources, they have the money, they do it a certain way. But it means that the innovation is different too, because they don't have to think about how do I do this. And there's literally an effect shot that I figured out. We could not figure out how to do it because we didn't have the same VFX resources. And I was like, oh, why don't we just do this? And it's literally like the layer, like, it's as basic as coloring something in crayon. Like, it was, I don't know, maybe I'll never say thing, just because yeah. so many of the effects are so simple. And it's just thinking outside the box. But it's having that knowledge. And so for Space Dream Productions, we kind of have like a multi-faced company. We provide content for small businesses. We do social media content, videos, photos, you know, TikTok. We'll make content, commercials, ads, all that stuff. As creatives, we do features, we do shorts, we'll develop music videos and book trailers and all of that stuff. To fellow filmmakers, we want to share anything we can with all of the people out there who are working so hard to make it in an industry that is run so incorrectly. Like a sales rep thinks it's their job to tell you how much they can sell it for, not to tell you how much money they need for a marketing budget to sell it. Like, that's fine. Tell me you need $2 million to sell the movie. And then let me have that conversation with my investor. Like, tell me, and then tell me what you're spending $2 million on in a marketing budget and why you think you're not going to get that money back. Like have a conversation. So for yeah, anyone,
I'm all about going independent.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
But even in the indie world, if you sign a contract with an investor, you have to get their money back or you're never going to get money from them again. And you do that enough times and you will be blacklisted because you are a black hole for their money. And it's not fair. Why are you getting to waste their money? Because you aren't business savvy enough or responsible enough to know what to do with the money that they earned. And say what you will about the 1%. There's so much wrong with it. I also worked as an assistant for a multimillionaire once. And that guy worked 70, 80 hours
a
week.
His ass off. Yep.
He earned every penny. And he knew that it was his job to make jobs for people. And he knew that, I mean, he would have his kids come into the office to have dinner with him just so he could see his family because he was a family guy and, you know, he loves his family. But he knew that if he messes up, all of his employees are going to be out of work and it's their jobs. And he paid us. I've never been as well paid as I was in that job. And that was my starting salary. And I was a woman, say what you will about female executives. The people who are earning more than me were other women. Like there were some men, but it was like other women at the company were earning more than I was because they'd been there longer. And I knew where my salary was slated to go if I had continued. And honestly, I couldn't keep up with his schedule. I was his assistant. I was his personal assistant and I couldn't keep up. It was too much. And that's saying something. So at least in film, you know, you go on set for a couple weeks and then you stop. Yeah. This guy doesn't stop.
you can't stop.
You know, so people are giving you money. Usually they earned it. Usually. I'm going to say hopefully they earned it. So the business of film, knowing all that stuff is really important. But having the knowledge to defend yourself, to understand contracts, to know what to talk about, what to look for, how to watch out for yourself. You just need the knowledge. You don't need the money. Like you do, like obviously, you know, some people might be hearing this and saying, I don't have even $300 to make a short film. Okay, start now. Set aside $5 every time you can. Take 5% of your paycheck, whatever it is, take 5%, 1%, a dollar. Take something and set it aside. Because the time's gonna pass whether you save the money or not. So you can talk about how you don't have money, or you can start learning, you can start growing, and all the while you can just be putting a dollar in a jar on, you know, and maybe you make the, you know, maybe you make the movie when you're 45, or you can turn 45 and still be talking about how you never made that movie you wanted to make. So I feel very strongly about that. And I think people need to be empowered and enabled to tell their stories. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. On that note,
mic drop. I'm done.
Mic drop.
2 hours later.
All right, Cora. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. This is a lot of information.
I'm sorry.
No.
You can make a 2-part episode.
Part one, part two.
Cora talks a lot. Part one, Cora talks a lot. I don't know. I just have a lot to say. But I hope it helps people. I hope it if you need to cut it down, take out the part about my awards. Just talk about it. That doesn't help anybody. I mean, maybe it makes people want to listen to me because they feel like, oh, she's won awards. But if you have to cut anything, cut out that stuff.
Okay.
Focus on what's going to help somebody to hear it.
Okay.